Greetings. You are listening to the Northeast Ohio AFSC Weekly Audio Podcast. I'm Greg Coleridge. It is Friday, March 25th. Thanks so much for listening. We seek, as we say every week, to inform you about issues you feel important, update you about past and upcoming AFSC plans and activities, and inspire you to take action. It is, after all, grassroots social movements made up of well-informed, prepared, and motivated people that always create real change. A busy week last week with several activities that we were involved in both Cleveland and Akron. Last Friday evening, we co-sponsored a showing along with The Womb, The Way of Mind and Body, and the Akron Organizing Collaborative of the film Shadows of Liberty at The Womb in Akron. The film itself, as we have mentioned before, in promoting it, uncovered the truth about the corporate-owned media over the past and right up to the president. Just a superlative piece that peels away at how the media really works and in whose interests the media works. It's just a fine piece, an excellent documentary. We do have the DVD if anyone is interested in seeing it or in organizing a house party or just getting some friends. You're part of a group, you want to show it. We do have it. Feel free to contact our office. We'd be very glad to lend it out to you. Our number 330-928-2301. But the corporate control and manipulation of the media to promote certain issues and repress others is just so important, and all the more during the election year, as, of course, elections during, as sort of seen through the filter of corporations, is oftentimes transformed into little more than just circus shows or simply some sort of games or horse races with who's winning, who's losing, who's ahead, who's parting their hair one way or the other, devoid of significant issues. Sidetracked on spurious and insignificant distractions. Just an excellent piece, always important to understand the corporate control of the media, even more so during an election year. On Sunday, there was the latest meeting of the People's Peace and Justice Convention at Northside Presbyterian Church. Plans continue to organize in Cleveland prior to the Republican National Convention a two-and-a-half-day, what would be Friday, July 15, Saturday, July 16, and part of Sunday, July 17, a gathering to develop, talk about, and share what we're doing and develop plans from those peace and justice organizations locally, statewide, nationally that come together and assemble together to learn about what we're doing issue-wise, strategy-wise, but ultimately to prepare a people's platform that would be presented to the Republican National Convention, which begins the day after the ending of this, Monday, July 18, as well as getting it to the Democratic National Convention a week later in Philadelphia. So that was Sunday. Day later, Monday, Peace Action, Cleveland Peace Action hosted a talk by a guy named Chris Hermes, an activist and author of Crashing the Party, Legacies and Lessons from the RNC in the Year 2000. That was in Philadelphia. Actually, AFSC organized two vans, to go to Philadelphia. It was quite the scene, of course, following the Battle of Seattle a week, or I should say, a year, less than a year later in Seattle, where I and many other colleagues from AFSC, as well as tens of thousands of our friends from all over the world, gathered to shut down that event and prevent the World Trade Organization from finalizing plans. So the power elite was well prepared come the summer of 2000 to prevent individuals from exercising their First Amendment rights. And they shut down the Convergence Center, arrested a number of people, including at least a person from Akron that was involved in the scandalous activity of making puppets at the Puppet Center and Convergence Center. Found just ridiculous reasons to shut down the center on just the most minor of code violations. zoning violations at this warehouse that activists had secured for the convention. Anyway, we heard quite a bit about how to prepare locally, what to do, how to come together, what are the pitfalls, what are the lessons, what are the legacies of organizing and trying to host, if you will, people coming in from all over the country to, again, express their First Amendment rights, Fourth Amendment, preventing search and seizure rights from the powers to be, from the police, from the security apparatus that will be coming down quite hard, we anticipate. Hope not, but have to prepare for. So it was a good gathering, and then afterwards people came together to plan and talk about the projects underway, three of them at the moment, heretofore, taking place in Cleveland. There will be many more planned, no doubt, but at least as of now is this People's Peace and Justice Convention, a poverty, anti-poverty march, and what's being called the People's RNC, the Real Neighborhoods of Cleveland, tours of areas of the Cleveland area that the RNC delegates will probably not be visiting, those areas that have both been devastated by policies of the Republican Party over the past number of years, as well as showing what people are trying to do at the grassroots level, bottom up, to create real change. So those were the activities from this past week that we were involved in. Now turning to events coming up next week, three of them in particular. The first is the next meeting of the People's Peace and Justice Convention. We're now meeting virtually every week. Probably after this week, it'll be 2 weeks, but it's turning into at least every other week, if not more, the closer we get to July. Next meeting of that gathering, if you're interested, it's an open meeting, certainly could use many more people to be involved of the People's Peace and Justice Alternative Convention to the RNC will be Saturday, tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. at Northside Presbyterian Church, 4515 Superior Avenue. Monday at 1 p.m. is the next meeting of the End Poverty Now March for Economic Justice, one of the other activities taking place to coincide with the RNC, that being on the first day of the RNC, July 18th. Anyway, that this planning meeting, Monday, 1 p.m. at 3500 Lorraine Avenue in Cleveland, which is the same building of Organize Ohio, one of the main, if not the main, organizations that is spearheading, underlining this End Poverty Now March. Those are the two main events for this week. However, just looking slightly ahead, since to announce this event next week would be just literally on top of, so we want to make sure that you know about this at least a week ahead of time, and certainly we have referenced this many a meeting and many a podcast over the past couple of months, and that is the what is going to be fourth annual Move to Amend Ohio annual gathering. This is where individuals affiliated with Move to Amend, or just those who are interested, not yet connected locally or statewide with this network, can attend to learn, to strategize, to be inspired, to take back to where they are some tools, some information, some strategies, and hopefully some contacts of people in their community who are interested in working on ending corporate personhood and money as speech through education, advocacy, and organizing on behalf of what would be a 28th constitutional amendment called the We the People Amendment that's been introduced in Congress that the Move to Amend Network here in Ohio and our colleagues all over the country are pushing. The annual gathering will take place Saturday, April 2nd from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at First Unitarian Universalist Church, 93 West Weisheimer Road in Columbus. There are individuals traveling from Northeast Ohio, from the Akron area, Cleveland area, people going from Mentor, from Toledo, From there will be people coming from Athens, Oxford, Dayton, Cincinnati, all points around Kent area and elsewhere. So if interested and would like to hitch a ride from any of those areas and maybe others that I've not mentioned, give our office a call anytime this weekend or next week, early in the week, and we will try to put you in touch with someone else traveling from where you are or near to where you are to go to and from Columbus. Our office, 330-928-2301. Just to give you a flavor, though, of what is in store at that event, there will be other, in addition to introductions and what's going on, and a report from the Move to Mend Ohio Network, an exciting year from this past year. Keynote remarks will be provided by David Cobb and George Friday, both of whom are on the national leadership team of Move to Mend. And they'll be talking about what's happening in the movement, both issue-wise and strategy-wise. Following lunch, there will be two sessions of workshops. The first three workshops in each session. The first session has to do with We the People Together, Welcome to the Move to Mend Ohio Network for New People and Groups. A second workshop entitled Talking the Talk, How to Have a Conversation about Issues that Help Individuals, both public officials and the general public, evolve in their thinking about corporate personhood, money as speech, and creating real democracy. And the third workshop is entitled Inspiring Change, How the Arts Can Serve as a Catalyst to Widen and Deepen the Culture for Social Change. So that's the first workshop session for about an hour. The second workshop session focuses on these three topics. The first is Walking the Walk, Outreach to Labor, What to Say and How to Connect with Unions and Other Labor Organizations in Talking About Corporate Personhood and Move to Amend and Money as Speech. The second is Ethics, entitled Ethics in Action, which addresses outreach to faith and ethical communities, what to say and how to connect with diverse faith communities and organized ethical groups. And finally, the third workshop is entitled Incarceration Conflagration, focusing on the prison industrial complex and Black Lives Matter. Following those workshops, we end the day with a session open to all about, we open it up to those who attend to hear, discuss, debate, and make decisions on projects and activities that our network here in Ohio should be working on over the next year. And those proposals can be both directed to how we organize ourselves internally, as well as, excuse me, what we may want to focus on issue-wise externally. All proposals are welcome, so feel free to bring either in writing, sent to us beforehand, or just brought with you. We encourage people to try to send their proposals in beforehand so that we have an opportunity to make copies of them and make them available at the beginning of the day so that individuals can look at them and reflect on them before this last session in the afternoon. So all of that to take place next Saturday, a week from tomorrow, Saturday, April 2nd, in Columbus at the 4th Annual Move to Amend Statewide Gathering. Again, for any information about it, you can either call our office, 330-928-2301, or just simply go to the Move to Amend Ohio Network email page, or I should say website. You can check us out on email. The Move to Amend Ohio has a Facebook page. But to get more information about the actual conference online, you can simply go to movetoamend.org/Ohio, movetoamend.org/Ohio. And the very first item under the Move to Amend Ohio Network webpage is this fourth annual gathering. We now diverge from our normal period where we comment and reflect on issues from this past week to an interview.
This is Greg Coleridge with the Northeast Ohio American Friends Service Committee. Thanks for listening. Joining us today is Nathan Rutz. He is an organizer for the Communities United for Responsible Energy, a project of the Ohio Organizing Collaborative, which is a statewide group with chapters all over Ohio that brings together faith, community, and labor partners to work on racial, social, and economic justice for all Ohioans. Nathan is here today to talk about Akron-based First Energy Corporation and their current proposal before the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, which is to raise the rates of electricity of their customers, which may be you, to pay for antiquated and polluting power plants. The Public Utilities Commission of Ohio has been given the authority to grant or reject such proposals. The Ohio Organizing Collaborative has been raising quite a ruckus about the First Energy Corporation's plan, doing education, advocacy, and organizing to oppose this, what I believe, and many believe, is simply nothing more than a corporate bailout plan. So, Nathan, thanks for taking a few moments.
Sure thing.
Well, I just would like to begin by asking you to tell us more about what First Energy is specifically requesting before the PUCO.
Yeah, so First Energy is asking the Public Utilities Commission to allow them to add a rider to everybody's bills, so it'll be a piece that isn't, they're not going to raise the price of electricity directly, but to add an extra charge on everybody's bills for the next 8 years that will guarantee that first, that the regulated utilities, that's Ohio Edison, Toledo Edison, and Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company, will buy 100% of the power generated by two particular power plants that are owned by First Energy Solutions, which is the allegedly separate competitive generation part of First Energy. And those two plants are the Davis-Besse nuclear plant, which has famously almost melted down a couple times, and the Samus coal plant on the Ohio River, which is a massive coal-burning power plant. And this plan would also guarantee that First Energy gets a 10.3% return on this on the power from these power plants, no matter what, no matter how much it costs from these power plants.
So the plan calls for mandating that the power generated by these plants has to be used and has to be purchased.
Yes. So normally what's supposed to happen under competitive in Ohio's competitive marketplace, which is this is really ironic since First Energy lobbied for competition about a decade ago, but now it seems like they don't want it. But under when the monopolies were changed, where we have regulated utilities, so that's who distributes the electricity. So that's Ohio Edison, Cleveland Electric Illuminating, and Toledo Edison. They own the power lines. They're the ones that you get the bill from. They're supposed to buy electricity from the competitive market.
Yeah.
But when they split the distributors from the generators are then supposed to be sort of separate companies, even though both the distributors, Ohio Edison and the others, are and First Energy Solutions that actually owns the generating power plants are both owned by the holding corporation, the parent corporation, First Energy Corporation. So what's supposed
to
happen
is like a good old-fashioned vertical monopoly in which people...
Well, it was.
Yeah.
It was a vertical monopoly that was supposed to be regulated on both sides by the Public Utilities Commission, but now it's supposed to be competitive on one side and regulated on the other. So that's why you can choose your electricity generator. So no matter who you're getting your bill from, CEI or Ohio Edison, you can go on the Public Utilities Commission website. They've got this apples-to-apples chart where you can look at, okay, here are the other generators. Some of the names are like Verde or Constellation, or you see billboards for Direct Energy. And these are other generators, so they're making electricity somewhere and selling it to the distributors. So Ohio is part of this grid area operated by PJM Interconnection, and every couple years they say, okay, we think we're going to need this much power for the next 3 years, and they have generators bid into the system, where if we say, like, let's pretend they only needed 10,000 megawatts to be meet the system's needs. They say, okay, the cheapest stuff fills up this bucket first. So we're going to start with hydro from Niagara Falls or something, or a wind farm that's really cheap in Illinois. And then we're going to fill up those megawatts as until we get to the top of what we need to meet the demand. So right now, the Samus coal plant and the Davis-Besse nuclear plant aren't in that bucket because they can't generate competitively enough or cheap enough to be guaranteed that that energy will be purchased through the PJM interconnection market by the various distributors of electricity in our region. So because these two power plants aren't competitive in that market, First Energy is losing money on them because they can then try to sell the electricity from these non-competitive plants at like peak times or something, but these are giant, slow to start up power plants. Like nuclear plants and coal power plants are not designed to start stop. They're supposed to be on 24/7. So these two plants aren't making them enough money. So First Energy says, okay, well, what are we going to do? We're going to ask the Public Utilities Commission to guarantee that we can force the consumers to buy all the power, no matter how much it costs, from these power plants, and we're going to pretend it's a great deal.
So to speak, they're going to try to force the energy from those antiquated plants into that bucket.
Well, they're actually trying to go around the bucket. Normally, the distributors buy from the bucket. But in this case, First Energy wants to go around the bucket with its own power plant to its distributing to its distributors.
Okay, so this sounds like a horrible deal for consumers, and you have this entity called the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio that is on paper supposed to be defending the interests of consumers. You would think this is going to be very quickly rejected as a plan. Is that the case?
You think so. So the
or
Office of Consumer Council,
PUCO?
Yeah, Office of Consumer Council says it will probably cost consumers $3 billion over the 8-year term of this deal. But the Public Utilities Commission has held one set of public hearings, and that was in January of 2015. And they had one hearing, public hearing apiece in Cleveland, Akron, and Toledo, where lots of people came out and testified against the bailout. We're calling this a bailout. But so far what we've seen are the signs that the PUCO is leaning toward approving this deal without any improvements for the public, which is really disheartening since the Public Utilities Commission claims that their job is to balance the needs of the public and the energy sector. Even though, you know, I would think it's called the Public Utilities Commission, that they should really be on our side, the consumer side. And one of the crazy things about this is that any deal like this by law is supposed to show a benefit to consumers. And so First Energy is telling people that, oh, you're going to save money in the long term. It's going to cost money in the first couple years, but energy prices are going to go up, and compared to the rest of the market when everything gets more expensive, these old plants that can't cut it now are going to be a great deal in the future. And that's really not plausible. If First Energy really believed that these plants would be more competitive in the future, they wouldn't be offering us a deal. They would keep that money as profit.
Right, right. So what is driving the PUCO's position or leanings at this point, do you believe?
Well, it might be interesting to look at who appoints the PUCO, because they're appointed and not elected. And I believe that all of them, every single member of the PUCO at this point, was appointed by Governor Kasich. It's also interesting to note that First Energy is the largest political contributor in the state of all the utility companies. They've contributed millions over the last decade to state and federal officials on both sides of the aisle, but especially heavily on Republicans. Their previous CEO, Tony Alexander, was stridently Republican, very partisan in that way, and even as late as April 2014 gave a speech at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce complaining about how he thinks that climate change is a hoax and that coal is the future and that renewables can't ever possibly generate enough power for America. And that guy, he was in charge of the company for 15 years before the current CEO, Chuck Jones, came on in February of 2015.
So they've been a political force at the State House and in Congress through campaign contributions. They also have lobbied extensively in addition.
That's right. They lobbied.
Right? They have had multiple lobbyists, a whole team of lobbyists in Columbus as well as in D.C.
They do, and they successfully lobbied to have Ohio be the first state in the country to roll back our renewable and energy efficiency standards. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, good work for them, but we really need to evaluate how we're approaching these things and start taking on elections in our local and state races so that we can have more influence in the state for people that really care about the well-being of our fellow Ohioans rather than caring for the well-being of the pockets of the very rich.
Yeah, there's no question, and that's one of the reasons why there are so many people around the country that are just coming to believe that the whole political system is so rigged against the average person in favor of entities like First Energy that has inordinate and disproportionate political influence and setting the rules and distorting public policy at the detriment of people's pocketbooks as well as the natural world. What do you think, just a couple more questions real quick, Nathan. What do you think about this notion? You know, there was a time in this country where public utilities were public, where there were not. I mean, there was just this raging battle going on when you started to have these electrical generating companies about whether or not they should be, because they are by definition monopolies like railroads and other things, that from an economic perspective, you know, it doesn't make much sense to have five sets of different widths of railroad tracks, right, for each company.
Right.
Let's unify. Let's just have one. Same with, you know, having six or seven different water companies with different lines going into people's homes. That makes no sense. It just, from an efficiency standpoint, from an economic standpoint, it's better to have a single entity, and if you will, public monopoly that's owned by the public. Well, electricity was perceived by many people to fall under the same realm. It should be publicly owned rather than privately owned but quote-unquote regulated, where you have these regulatory agencies like the Public Utilities Commission in Ohio, but others like it in other states that don't represent the interests of the public, but rather are catering to the interests of the companies in question. What's your sense about, is there any sort of growing awareness or understanding that maybe rather than looking at trying to have regulatory agencies be better quote-unquote regulators, that maybe that whole system is just designed to be in favor of, in supportive of, and in defense of these big companies rather than the public? And maybe a better way to start thinking about this is to revisit the notion of public power and publicly owned public utilities.
Well, here in Cleveland, we have this public power company, Cleveland Public Power, that could be really great and was created by the legendary progressive mayor of Cleveland, Tom Johnson, and who famously said, "I believe in municipal ownership of all public service monopolies, because if you do not own them, they will in time own you. They will rule your politics, corrupt your institutions, and finally destroy your liberties." And in Cleveland, there's an awareness of public power, but in all honesty, I can't say that a lot of people that I've run into are thinking about public ownership of these natural monopolies like electricity, at least here in Cleveland, other than with Cleveland Public Power, partially because Cleveland Public Power has been run so poorly for the last decade, and instead of saving the city of Cleveland money, has really been bungled. But on the plus side, I mean, it is still literally owned by us, the citizens of Cleveland. And as such, I hope, and I still do believe, could be rescued and be a much better actor than a corporation like First Energy. But I agree with Tom Johnson. And I think that these things ought to be publicly owned, since they are a public benefit. And if they are publicly owned, then you take away some of the short-term profit motive that we see from companies like First Energy, where, like, on one of their earnings calls with their shareholders last year, CEO Chuck Jones bemoaned that people were switching to more efficient light bulbs in their homes quicker than they expected, and therefore they were selling less electricity. Where if you have if these are publicly owned and the point is to deliver service and not just to sell as many electrons as possible, then the game becomes much different and it's much better for people and our surroundings.
Well, that's well said. I have been of the belief that where there may not be a perfect situation between public and private, and that certainly publicly owned anything certainly has had and does have their problems. At least when you have something that is under the public realm, you and I and other citizens at least have some kind of shot at being heard and showing up to the city council or the city entity that's supposed to be regulating it, made up of city officials that are in fact directly elected, who are more directly accountable, and that you've got a much greater degree of direct leverage, political
right.
leverage, to try to hold these entities more directly accountable, to where they can't hide behind the proprietary information or entities of, well, this is private or this is secret, proprietary, private information. We can't release the contents or the business model or whatever else. They can't do that because it's publicly owned. So
right.
at least we have a better crack at trying to hold these entities when they do go off rail or off grid, so to speak, whatever the case may be, holding them accountable and responsible.
Yeah,
well, I'm wondering.
A couple years ago, we did that with Cleveland Public Power because they'd proposed mm-hmm. Ridiculous idea of building a garbage incinerator in a low-income neighborhood of Cleveland and calling it renewable energy.
Right.
And we did stop that because it would have taken recyclables right out of the stream that we were making money on and burning them. And instead of having them go to the landfill would be our lungs. So we did prevent that. And
yep.
it was probably easier to do because it's a public utility.
That's true. Well, what can listeners do based on where things stand and where do things stand right at this moment concerning
yeah.
the proposal, and what can people do to try to weigh in?
So there have been, over the last year, several organizations and thousands of people have weighed in with the Public Utilities Commission asking them to reject First Energy's proposal. And I would encourage you to continue to ask for that and even ask. So Andre Porter is the head commissioner. And I don't have his email right in front of me, but it's pretty accessible. And I would ask for more public hearings, because I think one of the problems is that the Public Utilities Commission lives in Columbus, where they are visited frequently by the paid staff of such lobbying firms as those employed by First Energy, rather than by the public. So they don't actually come face-to-face with the public who they're supposed to serve with any regularity. So if we've sent, we being Ohio Organizing Collaborative and Communities United for Responsible Energy, we worked with a lot of congregations over the last year. And congregations specifically because we've been affected by, so I'm a church council president and of a small church in Cleveland where we have a leaky old building that's very drafty. And one of the things that was in the renewable energy standard was that investor-owned utilities like First Energy were supposed to help congregations get energy efficiency audits. So when the efficiency standards were frozen, churches are no longer getting those, and I was sitting in our sanctuary last February, low, and seeing my contribution in the offering plate go literally out the window in the form of lost heat out the window. And with First Energy successfully lobbying against the efficiency standards, seeing that First Energy wants it that way. They prefer it that my dollars to church don't go to the mission where we feed lots of people, but to their pockets. And I found that really offensive. So we worked with several congregations, since it's a little bit different than the usual environmental suspects, And we visited Governor Kasich's energy advisor. We visited one of the public utilities commissioners in Columbus. We showed up and sang some remade Christmas carols at First Energy's headquarters last year and attempted to deliver a Christmas present of LED light bulbs to Chuck Jones. But anyway, I would suggest that people get a hold of the Public Utilities Commission and ask them for more public hearings, because we need those Public Utilities Commissioners to come look us in the eye, hear our concerns, and then, if they are going to make the wrong decision, to look us in the eye while they do it so they can see who they're actually affecting.
Right. And to get a hold of Chairman Andre Porter, who was the and is the appointed chairperson of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio by Governor Kasich, one can call, I just looked up the number, 800-686-7826. That's 800-686-7826, and the message being to ask for, to demand more public hearings on this very controversial plan.
Yeah, one of the really interesting things, too, is that there are a number of giant corporations, competitive energy generators, that have even jumped in against this bailout plan. So we've had some unusual, probably temporary allies in Dynegy and Exelon, which are giant competitive energy generators. So they own power plants that just sell electricity into that bucket, that grid I was talking about before. And they don't want to see First Energy get essentially free money on the backs of the ratepayers, because it makes their competitive plants less competitive in comparison.
Right. They're up against global companies in some cases, or at least companies in other parts of the country that may offer much more competitive rates, and that makes their products or services, whatever they are, by definition less competitive.
That's right.
Well, Nathan, for people who would like to find out more information about the Communities United for Responsible Energy or the Ohio Organizing Collaborative, how can they do so?
Check out our website at ohorganizing.org, and you can look up Communities United for Responsible Energy on Facebook, and there's a link on ohorganizing.org to our work on Facebook as well.
Well, great. Appreciate you taking the time, Nathan, to fill us in on the latest about First Energy and their proposed, again, corporate bailout. Encourage, once again, individuals to dial, call Andre Porter, and speak to whoever it is who answers the phone at the Public Utilities Commission. Again, that number, 1-800-686-7826. That's 800-686-7826. Thanks so much, Nathan.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's all for this week. Keep up with our activities. Contact us with questions, concerns, or willingness to help out. Our website is afsc.org/Akron. Facebook page is facebook.com/NEOAFSC. Our program blog is northeastohioafsc.wordpress.com. My blog is createrealdemocracy.wordpress.com. Until next week, onward for justice, peace, and democracy.